Hoe geef je richting aan verandering? Hoe maak je impact met visie, leiderschap en innovatie? Je hoort het op het podcastkanaal New Business Radio. Listen today, lead tomorrow. Hier vind je al onze programma's voor business shapers. Met gesprekken met leiders, ondernemers en vernieuwers die hun organisatie klaarmaken voor de volgende sprong. Check je favoriete podcastplatform en abonneer je op New Business Radio. Listen today, lead tomorrow.
People Power met Glenn van der Burg. People Power is een programma over de kracht van mensen in organisaties. Met interviews en laatste inzichten voor betere prestaties en gelukkige mensen. Deze week gaat Glenn van der Burg in gesprek met
Will Frost van de Otto Beisheim School of Management en Oscar Lauzegger van Oracle. De belofte van technologie is enorm. Sneller, beter, veiliger, leuker. Maar in de praktijk gaat er van alles mis. Denk maar aan jouw laatste software-implementatie. Of misschien moet ik tegenwoordig zeggen cloud-implementatie. Onderzoek toont aan dat er veel te winnen is. Er is ruimte voor 64% meer succes als je aandacht besteedt aan het verbeteren van de 7 skills en attitudes. In deze People Power duiken we in het onderzoek The Adaptable Business. En we gaan in gesprek met Will Frost. Hij is researcher aan de Otto Beisheim School of Management. En Oscar Lauzegger, Strategic Director Human Capital Management bij Oracle. En aangezien Will Duits is, of in ieder geval hij is een wereldburger, zal het gesprek in het Engels zijn. Samen met Oracle maken we elke maand een programma in de reeks Human Technology, waarin we de invloed van technologie op mensen en hun werk bespreken. En wil jij nou de nieuwste afleveringen van People Power via WhatsApp? Ja, dan moet je ons even opslaan onder je contactpersonen. Niet vergeten, want anders dan krijg je ons berichtjes niet. Nummer is 0645667548. Als je ons een berichtje stuurt met je naam en podcast aan, dan sturen we jij de nieuwste afleveringen zodra ze online staan. En we vinden het natuurlijk bijzonder fijn dat je luistert naar People Power.
Dit is New Business Radio.
People Power met Glenn van der Burg.
Met in de studio. In de studio, maar ik sla er helemaal van over. Ik ben er zo van geëmotioneerd. Dat Oscar Lauzegger er is van Oracle. And of course, we have to switch to English because on the phone is our esteemed Will Frost of the Otto Beisheim School of Management. Great to have you both here, Oscar in the studio and Will on the other side of the ocean, I think, Will. So where are you at this moment, Will?
Yes, I'm happy to be in as well. I'm in London at the moment.
In London, so you really are on the other side of the sea, I should say, in the North Sea. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
On the other side, but hopefully not too far.
Yeah, not so. Well, if you have to swim, it's kind of a stretch. Okay, so Oscar, let's start out with you. Some background in this study. Why was this study necessary?
Yeah, well, actually, I think it's already a year or two ago. We noticed, me and my colleague Joachim Skura from Germany, we noticed that when we had conversations with customers, we found out that in a lot of situations, they were actually driving, floating, steering on their gut feeling and experience and way less on data. And that raised all kind of questions with them. And after a couple of sessions, we thought, well, hey, would it be interesting to find out if that is A, really the case, and B, if you would have technology, does that help? That's one. But even more important, would it bring you additional benefits? And Joachim knew Will already, because we said we can make an Oracle study, but then it's, as we would say in the Netherlands, wij van WC eend, adviseren WC eend.
Yeah.
Sorry, Will.
Yeah.
But then we said, okay, if we could add a university or a business school and make it scientific, no matter what the outcome will be, then it will be interesting, not only for us, but it's interesting for everybody to read.
Yeah.
So that's when Will hooked up, and that's when we said, okay, what is our aim? What is our goal? And we said, well, if we would have around 150 or 200 people responding in Benelux and Germany, we would be quite happy. Will said, everything as of 250 is for me, you know, representable, and I can use that as a official paper. We even said internally, well, what if we would go to 600 people? Then it would be perfect. Our aim was to close it in 3 months. At the end of the day, we had 6,500 people responding globally. It took us over a year to analyze the more than 2 million data points that we had.
Yeah, because I can imagine that it's great that so many people respond, but at the other end, you have a lot of data to analyze, so the work is a lot more also.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The work
which Will did probably.
Well, indeed, it's 99% contribution to Will, because for us it was easy to interpret the data in the way we wanted to interpret it, which was good for a HR vendor. But Will was the one that always said, guys, we want a scientific part. So, you know, it's not what you want. It's what the data says.
Yeah.
And we had four goals. We had some questions that we want to be answered from that data points. And that's where we took a lot of time. So can we improve productivity, for example? How can companies become more efficient? Can we do something with performance management in combination with IT? And that's easy to say, but then how can you get that out of the answers of the survey, of the research? That was, I think, the biggest challenge for Will, at least for us, in patience to wait until he was ready for presenting.
Yeah. So Will, what was the main research question that you wanted to ask all these people?
I think it sort of generally stems from sort of my interest in a sort of paradox I came across when I first started this journey. So there's a study, I think, from Deloitte, or it's a relatively well-known phenomenon in academia, that you know, despite all of the amazing technology we have, so since the 1990s, you know, imagine, you know, the computer, internet, all of the tech that we've got, sort of despite all of this technology, sort of productivity growth and productivity itself in organizations and in economies has, you know, pretty much been stable. I mean, you would have expected, or at least I would have perhaps expected, you know, we've got all of this new technology going on. You know, I mean, at the click of a button, you can communicate with people across continents, you can collaborate, you can analyze and collect, like, you know, big data, all of this that's going on. You would expect organizations, countries to, you know, increase their productivity or their performance. But that's actually not really the case. So world productivity growth has halved between 2006 and 2016. So it's gone from 3.9% to 1.8%. Mm. And, you know, that just was, to me, quite shocking and a sort of conundrum that I felt we could address. And I think that's also where sort of my work with Oracle came in, is that we were essentially asking or looking at the same problem from sort of different angles. And that's how, you know, we decided to work on this study.
Yeah, because of course the promise of IT and also maybe the internet itself is, of course, that things will be easier, effectivity will be boosted, you will be more creative. But if you look at the productivity rates, then the answer is, well, it didn't work.
Yes, I mean, you could, if you put it very bluntly, yes. I mean, you know, you've got...
We're Dutchess, we put everything very bluntly.
But yeah, but you still are exactly where you started off, so what's the point, you know? Why bother with all of this technology? Why just, you know, go back and send letters again? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So and then you have to translate that into a study. How was the study conducted? Did you send out surveys all over the world? How did it work?
Yes. So we worked together with a market research firm that essentially sent out questions that we put together, or that I put together. And essentially, you know, collected sort of responses from, as Oscar mentioned, you know, 6,500 people. Of those, about 5,600 are sort of employees in organizations, and around 850 were human resources directors in organizations, you know, across 23 countries, and we had a very wide spectrum of industries. You know, to make sure that we had a representative sample and that we could actually say something meaningful with the data that we had.
Yeah. So then the outcome of the study is a bit too large to discuss within 1 hour. In preparation of this show, we have four main points that we want to discuss together. What are these points, Oscar?
Yeah. So as you said, you know, at the end, we inspired by Will, came up with a model, and we found out that if you look at the data and you would analyze it and you would put it into an HR perspective, we would have seven areas where the combination of a business domain, and technology would bring you a certain efficiency. So what I said, that those were seven. And if you look at what are the major ones, by far data-driven decision-making is number one. And that's something that I think is interesting to discuss.
Okay.
But also something what we would say maybe in the Netherlands as a bit more soft. So flexibility and embracing change. And how can technology stimulate that?
Mm-hmm.
A shared digital vision, which is maybe even difficult to capture as well. But the second important one is actually the learning culture. So it's data driven, it's learning, it's the flexibility, and that is under the umbrella maybe of a shared digital vision. And we thought that those were the four that makes it A, diverse, and B, most interesting to discuss.
Yeah. And of course, if people want to read all the seven outcomes of the study, they can of course look up the study on probably on the website of Oracle.
We can maybe even post a link here on your website.
We'll add it in the show notes of the podcast. So let's start with the data driven decision making. You already started with it, Oscar, in the beginning of the show. You said, well, we asked HR managers, HR directors, what is the basis of your choices, and they said gut feeling and experience.
Yeah, that's not something they said in response on the survey. It's something they said if we just had business conversations with them. So when I meet customers, when I meet C-level people, that's a lot of times what they actually said. You know, I'm in this business for 20 years and I know how it's done and I see trends and that's how I come to my decision making. I validate that with the people surrounding in my management team, and then we go to the left or right or whatever. Which is actually quite interesting, because if you look at those same companies, 9 out of 10 would, for example, have an outside world, a business they run for consumers or other companies, which we call marketing, right?
Yeah.
And in those areas, data is key. So what you see is companies actually use data to change their business model, to sell new products, to attract people, to analyze consumers, with one goal, to sell more. And at the same time, we see organizations that actually need to facilitate that department make choices on gut feeling. So very interesting to see that A, that was the case, and B, and I think we'll give some more insights on that later, is that actually a lot of the people we questioned actually felt the same, that it was quite strange that we take a lot of decisions based on feeling instead of based on data and proof.
Yeah. So, Will, what did the survey or the research say about this part, data-driven decision making? What is the promise that there is, the possibility that there is to improve all the decisions that they have been making?
Yes. So I think essentially, if I add some information, pick up some points Oscar mentioned, is that, I mean, it was actually quite shocking to see that about a third of decisions in the organizations that we surveyed were based on data. So two-thirds of the decisions were what I term as hippo decisions, so the highest paid person's opinion in the room. So you've got this, on one hand, you're collecting all of this data, but you're actually not using it. So only a third of the decisions that you make are actually based on that data, whereas the majority isn't. And when we dug a bit deeper and questioned those people, you know, the picture intensified, that actually, you know, people said, or 40% of the respondents said that, you know, the hierarchy in their organizations was very important and was key in the decision-making process. And perhaps even worse, as part of this decision-making process, is that 66% said that they were you know, afraid to critically reflect on the decisions they made. So people just, two-thirds of people just go out and make decisions, but then don't question them. How did those decisions come about? Why did we make them? Could we have done them differently? And so on. And
so two-thirds of the respondents said, well, we're afraid to ask those kinds of questions to our manager or director regrettably, the implementation of the choices that have been made. Well, we know everything about the results of that, because I think everybody experiences that in their day-to-day life on the job.
Yeah, and I think it's something which the interesting part is that you maybe wouldn't expect it anymore in today's world, because business-wise, I gave the example of marketing, but personal life as well. You know, I think a lot of us individuals make decisions based on not only experience, but combine experience and data, proof.
Reviews. Yeah.
Reviews, etc. And so it was very interesting to see that, you know, we found out before we started the study that that was the case, but that the study actually proved that it was real. It was not a gut feeling or wishful thinking.
Yeah.
It was actually something that was very much there, that companies still do make choices based regarding millions, maybe even.
Yeah.
But based on gut feeling.
And there's room for improvement.
Well, there's a big room for improvement. And I think the good thing about the outcome of the study, it's not about buy something and your issues are solved. It's actually about having technology in combination with a change within your organization. Those are the seven factors. That gives you, at the end of the day, the potential increase of productivity and efficiency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll continue this conversation and, of course, talking about the three other factors like learning culture, because that will be the first one that we'll be talking about in a bit.
People Power op Nieuw Business Radio.
Ja, natuurlijk luister ik naar People Power. Het is onmisbaar voor iedereen die nadenkt en werkt met mensen in organisaties. Was getekend, Jeroen Buescher. Doei.
People Power met Glenn van der Burg.
You have to switch to English again. I was already in the Dutch zone in my brain, but I have to switch back. Will Frost of the Otto Beisheim School of Management and Oscar Lauzegger of Oracle. One is in the studio, one is in London. We've already been talking about the one of the results of the research, data-driven decision making. The next one is the learning culture. Sounds a bit like an open door, Oscar.
It does, right?
Because that helps everything.
It does, and at the same time, it's not something that's really developed. So, as human beings, we like to develop ourselves, right? So, I think 9 out of 10 people in the world want to learn, want to get better, have kind of an internal motivation to get to that next level. At the same time, if you look at our world today, and I'm not talking about COVID itself, but in general, our world today, which is quite quickly changing, maybe on a monthly basis, even before this year. If a world changed, that means that a company needs different skills to maintain their relevancy for the future.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't come back to the previous topic and you would say, okay, so I need new skills for the future, but I don't really know which skills I have today because I'm lacking data. But I will make choices how to develop my organization to be ready for the future, although I don't know what they know today and what is the gap. And so at the end, for me, it's quite simple. If you want to know what you need tomorrow, you first need to know what you have today. There, decide on what is then the gap between what I have and what I need, and how can I develop people? Are those people in already? Can I develop them, or do I need to attract people from the outside world? And that's actually where learning culture at itself, as you said, is maybe an open door. But the combination of learning culture and data is essential and crucial. And I think that's where a lot of companies still are not there yet.
In one of the previous shows, I had somebody who's learning and development consultant. And he said, well, what's not happening in that area is that we do not look at what is actually the organizational problem that we have to solve.
Yeah.
Which was very insightful, because sometimes we are developing people because of, we want to develop people.
Yeah.
But we don't know why we are developing.
What is the purpose? What is the essence? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that's what your research also says.
Yeah, absolutely.
Am I correct, Will?
Yes, indeed. So very much so. I mean, I think this very much ties together with the first point about, you know, making decisions based on data. You've got what I sort of encountered is that organizations obsess about KPIs, obsess about sort of quantifying something for the sake of it without actually knowing why. So you have all of these, you know, systems that measure things, but you don't really know why you're measuring them and essentially what the goal is. And I think part of that, or what causes part of that, and that's what also the study has shown, is that, you know, we don't know why we're measuring it, but we also don't exactly know how we can close this gap. So it's not just about getting in, you know, the data scientists and sitting them around the table and, you know, hiring lots of people and spending lots of money on technology. It's about the decision makers having some sort of rudimentary, it needn't be particularly sophisticated, but a conceptual understanding of what these data scientists are doing all day. So you can have, you know, well-founded discussions with them, probe them, question them, because you always think that numbers are objective. They aren't. You know, numbers are very subjective. They can be manipulated. They can be sort of framed in a particular way so that you get the result that you want. And if you don't know how to question the end result of your numbers or your data, then you don't really know what questions you need to ask to make better decisions.
Yeah.
And what we have found is that if you do that, if you are able to implement a sort of learning culture where you have this continual process of measuring, of using data to you know, develop people, not just for the sake of developing them, but for the sake of some sort of organizational goal that might be very individual to each organization, but of having not only the data to develop these, to determine what these goals are, but also develop the necessary and critically relevant skills in the organization to reach those goals, that will lead to a 6.7% sort of bottom line impact on your productivity and your performance. So, you know, having...
Okay, so having I think we have to stress that a bit. 6.7% to the bottom line. An increase of the bottom line.
So 6.7% impact, it doesn't sound much, but if you're thinking of a big organization or any organization, just by sort of changing the way you make decisions and the way you develop people and the way, you know, you try and implement or move towards a learning culture, it's just making better choices with what you've got rather than, no one says you need to spend more money. It's about allocating your resources in a better way.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think nobody would say no to that.
I think nobody will say no to that up front. At the same time, it's easily said because it's not, again, buy something and you're there. It's a change. And especially this one is a real change. So it's not something that you will do and achieve overnight. But it makes it even more crucial to think when you make choices, why you are making certain choices and what it is it that you want to get out of it. And I think that is, if you look at the model and the potential that you can achieve, not considering anything in the outside world that happens, and this year we know stuff will happen, so of course that will have an impact. But if you want to achieve the maximum, you have to think about your vision and roadmap, how to get there, instead of thinking, okay, I buy this software, or if you take it out of HR, I buy this car and then I'm there, but maybe on the long time that was the wrong choice. And you should have bought a different car to achieve your goals.
Yeah, or so, no car.
Or no car, exactly.
And I think this is what the study has shown in general, is that technology itself, so just going out and buying some you know, great technology product, the impact is far, far smaller. So only 4.6% is down to of your productivity increase is down to the technology itself. So the four factors or the seven factors, they play a much bigger role in taking those 4.6% of technology itself and amplifying it to drive up your productivity by up to 64%. So it's really about what you do with your technology rather than just going out and buying something. And then, you know, and intuitively it makes sense because, you know, you need to use all of the fancy technology you have or the money you spend on your data scientists. What if, you know, they're laboring away, building their fancy models with the latest technology, but at the end of the day, you're sitting around a decision and you make a hippo decision. So, you know, a very senior person in the room overrules everyone else who's been paid a lot of money to come up with these models just because of intuition or because of hierarchy.
Yeah, and to add,
that's essentially what our model says.
No, absolutely, you're correct, Will. And I think what's interesting is, Glenn, that, you know, it's great that we have a research. It's great that scientifically what we are telling you right now is correct. But still, we were not really satisfied because, you know, it's great if you have a research, and then what? So what we actually did is we created something like a workshop where we go to customers and we actually, in the duration of a day, we actually do a workshop with them to run them through the study based on their current situation. And what then is interesting is that, for example, if you look at learning culture decision making based on data and the percentage that came out of the study, if you would do a blueprint with a customer, you go through that workshop, you actually see it's proven and that the efficiency is actually really there. And that was for us maybe even the biggest thing, because yeah, it's great if you have something to read, but it's a bit more better in my opinion if it's usable.
Yeah.
And this proved up until now at least that the model itself is actually absolutely real and it can help companies.
Yeah. So let's go to flexibility and embracing change, because, well, we've already had some conversation about the speed of everything changing,
yeah.
Which we can debate for hours. But if you look around you, well, especially in these times of pandemic, things are rapidly changing. And then the big question, of course, is, yeah, what's the influence of how people within the organization embrace the change that is happening, or are they resisting the change?
Yeah,
because that's happening a lot of times, of course, within organizations.
No, that's absolutely the case, and I think and the answers are mixed as well. I think we'll come back to that a little bit later. I think what was for us interesting is to see, in today's world, where we have a lot of changes due to COVID, but when we started this was pre-COVID. So change was not about, we need to work from home. Change was, for example, are you considering letting your employees work from home? Which is a part of change, which gives your employees kind of flexibility, and not only employees, by the way, but also yourself. So interesting to see was that actually the outcome was that a lot of companies say they want to do so, especially from vision or strategy perspective, but that, for example, an HRD or a CHRO was not considered to implement it in the upcoming 2-3 years. Then, unfortunately, COVID hit the world at the end of last year and in Europe since this year. And then everybody needed to adopt working from home, but then you saw that technology that they used were not ready to do so. So, thinking about
a big difference between companies that already had everything in place,
absolutely,
and companies that were still lagging.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, and I don't have proof from what I'm going to tell right now, but I even think that companies that were maybe not doing so good actually benefited from the fact that they were already ready for the future and therefore fully operational, then instead of being offline for 2 or 3 weeks because you were not ready to, you know, to digitalize your organization.
Yeah.
And I think that, coming back to data decision making at the end of the day, that's why you need to think about tomorrow, not on gut feeling, but also on data. No one could have predicted what happened. But if you are trying to be ready for whatever will come and you don't know what it is, at least you will be better prepared. And I think that's something that proved afterwards, unfortunately, right.
Yeah.
Based on the study. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Will, what did the study say about this aspect of the seven that we have?
Yes, so we went out and actually asked all of the HR directors whether what their plans were for something as you know basic as allowing remote working, and only 36% said that they were considering to allow it within the next 3 years. So this was about a year ago. So you know, only you know that little were actually actively considering to allow remote working, which I thought was a bit bonkers considering the technology is there.
Yeah, unbelievable. And a few months later, they had to. That must have been quite a shock.
Yes. Yeah, so if I would expect now that if we went out and asked the people, you know, a whole lot of different questions about, you know, allowing them about working, the responses would be significantly different. But I think picking up on one of the points Oscar made, which is really good, was that perhaps some organizations that weren't performing particularly well but were perhaps more ready to adopt flexibility and change just got me thinking. And if I look back at some of the data that we had, 37% of the people that we looked at, they were afraid of staying relevant.
Yeah.
So that's perhaps where some of the resistance to change might come from. You know, people are afraid of I mean, we've got 24% of respondents saying that they have some sort of fear of at least part of their jobs being automated or replaced. And to us, that was interesting because, you know, it shows that there is some sort of fear or resistance building up to change. But we know that from our model is that organizations that are culturally more flexible and that openly embrace change rather than resisting it, and sort of the organizational attitude and culture, that contributes over 10% sort of to business productivity. So that, in a way, has a big impact on how productive, on how efficient your organization is.
And to add, Will, I think what also really helps is it's not just about facilitating, it's also about explaining why we think, as a company, we have to go from A to B or do certain development areas, etc., to stay relevant. And one of the interesting things is as well that maybe even a company thought, coming back to my workshop example I just gave, maybe a lot of companies even thought we need to change A, B, and C. But then at the end of the day, when we did the workshop and we explained the study, they actually thought, no, we need to change C, D, and E. So there's only one thing that we foresaw and the rest is actually totally different. So it is also about how to take your employee and your organization on that journey and inform them why it's relevant and why we think we need to do what we need to do.
Right. So,
and I mean, this very much ties together with, you know, the first point again with data-driven decision-making, because part of making decisions based on data is that you need to keep an open mind. You need to be flexible in your approach. You shouldn't come to the decision-making table with a predisposed sort of way you want to go, because the data you might get in might show something completely different, and you need to be open and receptive to that. And I think that's what we found was such a critical factor in enabling good decisions, which then in turn increase your productivity and your business efficiency, which then increase your market and competitive performance.
Well, great. So after the break, we'll further talk with Will Frost and Oscar Lausegger. But first, we'll hear from our... we have a great column from Farid Tabarki in Dutch, by the way. So we have to switch in our brain to another language center. But it's probably no problem for our listeners.
People Power. Inspirerende gesprekken over de kracht van mensen in organisaties. Met Glenn van der Burg.
Oh ja, een knopje aanzetten. Farid Tabarki is onze columnist en die heeft een prachtige tech-column gemaakt voor ons.
De mens is inmiddels zo versmolten met technologie dat hij er ziek van kan worden. En bij mij gebeurde dat vorige week. Ik kreeg typische technosomatische klachten. Daarmee ben ik definitief toegetreden tot de kasten der cyborgs. Deze organische machines zijn in de populaire cultuur vaak een schrikbeeld. Hun bovenmenselijke krachten lenen zich uitstekend voor thrillers of horrorfilms. De menselijke angst voor techniek is nooit ver weg. Op den duur zullen nanobots in onze bloedbaan circuleren en levensfuncties reguleren. Maar de cyborg van nu, die is zo nog ver niet. Een pacemaker bewaakt de hartritme. Een iWatch geeft de tijd aan en meet intussen je vitale functies. Ja, mobiele telefoons zitten nog niet letterlijk aan ons vast, maar figuurlijk al volledig. Volgens een onderzoek van de UK Post Office leidt 53% van de Britten aan nomofobia. Angst om zonder mobieltje te komen zitten. Zelf kreeg ik een acute aanval van nomofobia toen recent mijn iPhone na een valletje van zo'n 10 centimeter binnen 5 seconden van een kleuren naar een groen naar een zwart scherm ging. Dood. Ik dacht dat ik postmaterialistisch genoeg was om hier tegen te kunnen, maar ik kreeg echt keelpijn. Deze technosomatische klacht ging pas over nadat een dag later bleek dat de meeste gegevens bewaard waren gebleven voor de nieuwe iPhone. Gered. De bewuste avond overbrugde ik bij wijze van zelfhulp met het lezen van Red de Mens van Mieke Gerritsen en Koert van Mensvoort. Zij stellen dat de steeds inniger band tussen mens en technologie een van de grote verhalen van onze tijd is. En werpen de vraag op waarom het daarmee meestal over confrontatie in plaats van collaboratie gaat. In het boek The Second Machine Age geven Andrew McAfee en Erik Brynjolfsson een interessant voorbeeld van de mogelijkheden van samenwerking, zonder dat je direct hoeft te denken aan implantaten of rare brillen. Ze halen schaakgrootmeester Kasparov aan, die ooit werd verslagen door de computer Deep Blue. Sindsdien is het voor mensen steeds moeilijker om van de computer te winnen. Interessant is dat op zogenaamde freestyle-competities, waar je op elke manier mag spelen die je wilt, juist teams van mensen plus computers winnen. De mens kan creatief vooruitzien. De computer rekent de beste tactiek door. Een goed team met een aardige laptop wint van de briljantste schaker en van de snelste supercomputer. Het vooruitgangsdenken hoeft dus nog niet helemaal bij het oud vel. En Koert van Mensvoort heeft daarom het Next Nature Network opgericht, dat technologie wil inzetten voor juist een natuurlijkere wereld. Uiteindelijk moet misschien niet alleen de panda, maar ook de mens gered worden, stelt hij. Maar first things first. De redding van de mens begint bij een onverwoestbare mobiele telefoon.
Tja. En terwijl ik dat hoor, denk ik, je moet ook maar eens even zo'n hoesje kopen waar je je iPhone van het flatgebouw af kan gooien. Dankjewel, Farid.
People Power met Glenn van der Burg.
So, switching back to English. Ooh, it is a really a challenging show today. So we've been talking about data-driven decision making, learning culture and flexibility and embracing change. We promised our listeners to also have a talk about shared digital vision. And I can imagine that a clear vision could help. But the big question is, how many organizations have such a clear vision? Mm-hmm. So what does the research show, Will, about that?
Well, we know that the majority, fortunately, of organizations, so over 80%, have some sort of digital vision. But that's not—it's not all good news, however. So we do know that of our survey, about 70% said that while they did have some sort of digital vision or digital strategy, there were strong disagreements within the organization as to whether it's right or whether people subscribe to it or not.
So having it is one thing, but understanding it, believing it, and sharing it is another thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how important is this one, Oscar?
I think it's crucial, and maybe the outcome at itself or the impact as a standalone factor is maybe not the biggest. But it also enables the three, for example, that we discussed earlier, So if you don't take someone on a journey, if you don't explain why you do stuff, if you don't show them why it's relevant and not something you made up of, if you don't express and make very clear why it is crucial that we get new skills on board or trained to be ready for the future, then people don't know why you do stuff. And I think, you know, so having a digital vision, like Will said, yes, luckily most companies have one, but sharing it to start a debate, to get open communications, to maybe get rid of the culture of I'm the highest paid person, so my opinion counts the most, which actually brings your organization to the next step. That's something that's still failing.
So this factor helps all the other factors.
It is a factor in itself, but it's also an enabler for certain other areas of the research paper. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's say I've done a good job. Mm-hmm. I have a clear vision. I shared it. I discussed it. Everybody believes it.
Yeah.
What's the benefit then, Will? What does the research show that the benefit of it is?
Yes, so we know again here that it's around 10% of an impact it can have on your productivity. So it's not just sort of combined with technology. So technology plus a shared digital vision that enables the technology that enables, you know, the three other preceding points we mentioned and in the other six sort of in the research paper, that leads to about 10% improvement in your business efficiency or productivity.
And even if this is the only thing I do?
Yes. So even if this is the only thing you do, so if it's the only thing you do, it's about 10%, but each factor sort of you add on top brings sort of its own percentage. So for data-driven decision-making, it was around 11.6%. And for flexibility, it was also around 10%. So each of these factors combined with technology then help to boost something you have in your control, which is your productivity. And that in turn then improves your competitive or market performance.
Yeah, by some 64%, of which a bit more than 4% is due to the technology itself.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
So I think that's perhaps the surprising insight where maybe I or our data threw perhaps a spanner in the works, because, you know, we perhaps from a very sort of tech background were expecting the technology factor to be far greater, but actually it's very little, and that was, so it's only the 4.6%, and that was a surprising thing for us.
Yeah.
The sort of hippo decision might have been, okay, that's wrong. Technology is far more important. Let's go and buy a lot more technology. But the right decision, so sort of carrying on the decision-making, evidence-based decision-making, would be to say, okay, technology is only one component of that. And you've got all of these other enablers, the seven factors, that then translate into 64% increase in productivity.
Yeah. So leading up to the end of the show, the big question I can imagine our listeners are experiencing is the big question. Okay, so now I know that I should give far more energy and time to all the other factors, not being only the technical implementation. But the big question, of course, is how do I do that?
Yeah.
So could you both leave us with the golden tip on how to proceed from this broadcast?
I think if I may start, and otherwise you will tell me not to, then.
You may start.
Thank you. No, I think you have to be very clear in what is it where I want to go. And at the end of the day, Glenn, it's not about that I do everything that's said in the seven factors or I buy technology. It's about how you utilize technology to enable your organization to change. So if I want to make decisions based on data, to give one example, I need to understand where my data comes from. Is it consistent and is it accurate?
Yeah. And what kind of questions do I have to answer? Sorry? What are the questions that I need to answer?
Well, this is one of the questions. So yeah. Looking at, I'm going to think about, okay, I want to make more decision based on data. Then you need to think about where does the data from my organization come from, where I base my decisions on. Mm-hmm. And is that, for example, are there multiple systems with multiple data entries? So what is the consistency level of that data? Or do you look at, actually, I need it from one database to ensure that what I get is truth?
Yeah.
And so for every of those factors, same goes, for example, for learning culture. Do I just want to be a learning culture organization, or do I want to ensure that it's based on facts and figures? And therefore, technology is a very important enabler as well. So it's thinking about how to transform my organization. It's thinking about, do I need technology and what is it? But it's more important, it's the combination of the two. And I think if you would download the research paper, paper as a listener, you would see in a model that, you know, the factors at itself are not relevant. Technology at itself is not relevant. The combination that gives the power.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. So, Will, what will be your golden tip?
I think sort of my tip would be to see this very much not as an, I don't know, annual exercise you do. It's more of a process. It's very much a marathon. So this isn't a sprint. It's not just that, you know, for the next quarter you can change, you know, make one big change and it's done. It's more of a process. It's a gradual shift in terms of your attitude as an organization, your culture, your values, all of these things that I think many organizations talk about, but then don't really follow through, all of these gooey sort of soft things. But what our research has shown is that these soft things actually play a really important role as enablers. So in of themselves, per se, they aren't that important, but together with technology, they are sort of very crucial. And there is no silver bullet, so that it's not that you can do this overnight, that it's this sort of, because it's dealing with, you know, those human aspects of organizations, it's a very gradual process that will take time to develop. So it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because it's a marathon, you can just start.
Yeah.
So exactly. So you don't have to wait. You just start today. Yeah, do not make a big, humongous plan, but just start today. Start the conversation. Exactly. Start asking questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, build sort of momentum from the bottom up, but also show leadership from the top. So, you know, get people to engage, ask for people's opinions, make sure that people are part of the conversation, and then drive that forward to make sure that you just do something, because we know that doing nothing isn't really a great option. But doing something is a lot better than nothing.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It was very insightful. Thank you, Will Frost, all the way from London. And of course, Oscar Lausegger here in the studio from Oracle. I will see you probably next month, I think, Oscar.
At the end of this month.
Yeah. Yeah. Already. So thank you, Will, for your time.
Thank you.
Het was very, very insightful. Ik schakel ondertussen weer over in het Nederlands. Mocht je denken, ja, ik wil veel meer weten, dan kan dat. Dan kun je de research van Will Frost en natuurlijk samen met Oracle kun je downloaden. Wij zullen het linkje in de show notes zetten op onze website. Als je die nu live luistert, ja, dan zul je even moeten wachten. Maar dan ga je straks gewoon naar peoplepower.radio en dan vind je het linkje. Wij zijn er natuurlijk volgende week weer. Luister je de podcast, is het misschien wel straks als je uitgesteld luistert. En het grappige is, dan gaan we het een beetje over hetzelfde thema hebben, want dan komen Hajo Reijers en Maria Peters, beide van de Universiteit Utrecht, die komen langs. En die gaan we het hebben over wat je kunt leren van de data die uit organisatieprocessen komt. Want daar kun je namelijk heel veel van leren om uiteindelijk diezelfde processen weer te verbeteren. En dat willen we natuurlijk met z'n allen. Ik dank jou in ieder geval zeer dat je hebt geluisterd. En meer luisteren kan natuurlijk op peoplepower.radio.
Meepraten of meer programma's? people-power.nl